You're listening to The Football Hour.
You're listening to The Football Hour, myself, Dom Betts, and once again, Alex Mearns is not here. He's busy with work, holidays, all that, and I know I'm stuck here in a Harrow radio studio, but I am joined by someone else today. He's been on The Football Hour before. It's Callum Delling, the Birmingham City fan. How are you, Callum?
That is one of the greatest introductions I think I've ever received. Got to say, though, nothing wrong with a Harrow radio studio on a sunny day like this.
I'd say that inside, no windows, just good artificial lighting from the lights and the studio lights, etc., etc. But it's another week of Premier League, and we've got to analyse it because some good stuff did happen. It wasn't just boring. There were some good results this week. Not like the 1-0s and the 1-1s there was in the first week.
Classic Premier League for me.
Yeah, very, very classic Premier League. Here we start. We had the first Friday night Premier League football ever. And it was Man United versus Southampton. Two goals from Zlatan Ibrahimovic and obviously Paul Pogba's debut. I think I predicted 3-1 in this game, so I wasn't too far off.
Yeah, I think it was kind of the debut you'd come to expect from Paul Pogba, really. I know a lot of Man United fans expect him to come in and absolutely take the world by storm, but he came in and did what he did at Juventus for a few years. He kind of bossed that midfield department that is his, and I think he was the reason, even though he didn't actually get an assist during the match, that Zlatan Ibrahimovic, apart from the penalty, actually managed to bag, which was something I wanted to see because he's my fantasy captain, so double points. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Man United because they haven't really played that well this season. For me, they haven't actually been that much of a good side, but it's showing that old United way of we don't need to play well, but we can still win comfortably, because Southampton weren't out of the game. They were getting chances. They were getting counter-attacking chances. Yeah, Southampton, I haven't been impressed with them. I mean, you have Claude Puel, who no one really knows too well. I mean, you know what he's done in France. He was at Monaco's old playing career. He's got to the semi-finals of the Champions League with the likes of Lyon. He did well with Nice to get them to fourth in the French League. But no one really knows what to expect from Southampton this year because they've obviously been selling their best players. But the one thing everyone's noticed is he's playing Redmond up front. Because everyone was really annoyed when Redmond started out as a striker in fantasy football this year. And everyone was like, what's going on? He's definitely not a striker. And then, I mean, it didn't really help because Claude Puel says he's the next Thierry Henry. I mean, that didn't really help. But, I mean, what have you made of Southampton this season?
Well, I think, first of all, the appointment of Claude Puel is a very, very strange one. It's got Remy Gard vibes for me, and we saw how well that turned out for Aston Villa last season. But if Southampton think he's the man for the job, then we'll trust him for a couple of months until he inevitably gets sacked. On Nathan Redmond, though, having seen him kind of develop from the age of 16 at Birmingham, I think he could actually play as a striker. Maybe not the next Thierry Henry, I don't think he's that gifted, but working in the kind of system that Southampton use, he's going to get you goals, which he proved on the opening day of the season. Now, I don't think Southampton are going to be the force they were a couple of years ago when a lot of people had them as an outsider for Champions League places. They're not going to get relegated, though. They're not going to qualify for the Europa League, let alone the Champions League. It's going to be an odd mid-table season for them where they'll get the occasional result against Arsenal, Chelsea, sides like that, but they're going to need to improve from their performance against Man United.
Yeah, I mean, and Man United's game this weekend is the evening game on Saturday away to Hull. And if you said this maybe, well, basically before the season started, you'd be like, oh, easy 3 points. But I mean, Hull have got many points as United have got this season in two wins. They beat Leicester at home, the champions. Then they won away at Swansea, who I think are doing well under Guidolina, whatever you say their manager's name. So that'll be actually be a record. That'll be a good game because Hull will definitely be up for it. Obviously, United will. And I think United are back. I know it's only been two games, plus the Community Shield. But I just think they're back to looking like they can win the league. Because they've never looked like under Van Gaal or Moyes that they had any chance of winning the league.
Well, I completely agree. I think they're definitely my tips to win the league this season. Players like Ibrahimovic, Pogba, as we mentioned, Jose Mourinho's manager as well, that is a man who knows how to win the Premier League. We've seen that on three occasions. I think they might win it by a country mile, even though we're only two games in. Man City are looking good as well, and then obviously you've got all the other teams that are always up there. But they, I think, have got this year settled already.
And you just spoke about Man City, so we'll move on to their game because they had a lunchtime game on a Saturday. 4-1 against Stoke. Obviously, the main talking point from this game was the tugging penalties. What did you make of it? Do you think it's good that the referee pulled this up, or do you think the referee sort of was just balancing out a poor decision he made in the first half?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both in that he was balancing it out because, obviously, I don't know if you saw the tweet by the Stoke City account. It was like, I wonder if the referee would do that if it was in the other end, which he did, so fair play to him. But it's one of those where, let's say this happened in a complete different game, there was only one penalty given because the new rules that have been brought in. If I were a home fan and it was my side that got the penalty, I'd be delighted and I'd wonder why that rule hadn't been in place for years before. However, if I support the opposition, I'd be really annoyed because a lot of them look very innocuous. But the laws of the game, it is a penalty. So I think it was Mike Dean, right?
Yeah, Mike Dean. Yeah.
Definitely did his job properly.
For me, the first one is a definite penalty. It just hasn't been given in the past. But he's not looking at the ball. He's just on about his man, pulling his man, stopping him from getting the ball. That's one, it's obstruction, and he's not playing the ball, he's playing the player, trying to stop him getting the ball. So for me, yes, that is a penalty, but it may break the rules, but you've got to use common sense sometimes, and you can't just give it in that game. Now you expect all the referees, and in Mike Dean's rest of his games, to give any sort of tug in the box.
Well, it's set a benchmark, I think, for the rest of the Premier League season, the Football League as well, because seeing those given now is going to rile up fans even more when they're not given in other matches, which we've seen for years and years prior to this.
It was on Match Today. I can't remember. I think it was Alan Shearer then. There was a defender on as well. And the defender was arguing that, oh no, it's just how football is. And then you have the attacker and Alan Shearer saying, well, yeah, it should be a penalty if you're dragging me to the floor and not trying to play the ball. But if we talk about the game, were you impressed with Man City in this game, or do you think the result sort of overdid how well they played?
I think the result was a tad unfair on Stoke City. I mean, Man City are a very, very good side, as I mentioned. They're going to be one of the teams that are challenging for the Premier League title. But Stoke didn't really embarrass themselves. And until Nolito turned up in like the last 10 minutes of the match and bagged two, it looked like they might actually be able to snatch a point.
I mean, I had Aguero as captain this week. So points for me. When I was sitting in the pub at the home game at Fulham and Cardiff, and I was like, yes, Aguero. Getting more points. But no, it was only like 2-1 till like the 85th minute or whatever it was. So Stoke could take some positives from this game. I know their only goal was a penalty, but it didn't exactly, as you said, embarrass themselves. So I think they could still aim for their top half finishes, which they sort of established themselves in now.
Well, the fact is their only goal was a penalty, but you don't get penalties if you're not threatening the opposition to start with, because
yeah,
obviously
exactly.
You've got to be in the 18-yard box. Stoke could be definitely, well, I mean, we were talking about Southampton earlier. I think they'll do better than Southampton.
Yeah, they sort of remind me of where Fulham were from about 2010 to 2012.
Anonymity or?
No, just finishing in the top half, not, and sort of on the border of getting into the European places. I mean, we got there once, but I mean, on the border, like they've just put, because they got into Europe, was it last season or season before?
Yeah, I think they've done it on a couple of occasions.
And I know that was through the cup, but I think they're in that same area as Southampton, is they're nearly there, same as West Ham, they're sort of there, but they're not quite there. They still need a few more signings, I think, if they want to push into the top seven. And especially with all the new managers this year, the top seven is going to be even harder to get into. If we move on, there is Burnley beating Liverpool 2-0. And I love this, because my striker, alongside Aguero, is Andre Gray.
And how did you do that last week?
A goal and an assist. Lovely. I know, I've had Andre Gray in from the beginning, because he's a championship striker, like the Troy Deeney, the Charlie Austin,
yep,
who I think is going to get like 15 odd goals this season. So I was like, yeah, shove him in. And I forgot to change my team around this week, because I forgot it was Friday Night Football. I was like, oh, I've got Damari Gray. Not Damari Gray, sorry. That is the ex-Birmingham youngster at Leicester.
I did have Damari Gray. Just going to throw it out there.
Andre Gray. And I was like, oh my God, he scored. And he set up Sam Vokes' opener. But didn't like Burnley have like 20% possession or something in this game?
Yeah, they did what I like to call a Birmingham City style 2009-2010 win, in that they were absolutely dominated by a much better side and somehow managed to grab two goals from what were probably two attempts in the entire match and take the 3 points, infuriating Jurgen Klopp.
And we can't talk about this game without talking about Andre Gray's Twitter account.
Yes.
He's got a fine for it from the FA.
Yep.
Do you think it's right he's got a fine for it?
I think it's completely right that he got a fine for it. Well, like, he's made the point now. See, I don't want to get too in-depth on this, but he says his views have changed, but whether or not your views have changed or not, tweeting that, whether it's 4 years ago, 10 years ago, it's not really acceptable in any kind of context.
What I don't understand, if you in any other field applying for a job, you look through their Twitter account. That is what you have to do as an employer. Did Burnley just not do that? Does his agent have common sense? Has his agent not looked at his Twitter account or his PR people?
Well, you'd think he'd have a social media team now, being a Premier League player, like Christian Benteke's went horribly wrong last week. But I don't understand how, because that wasn't the only tweet, the one that got him fined. There were loads and loads that are still there. He's only deleted one of them that don't exactly cast him in a positive light. Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it lightly, I guess. Doesn't shine him in good light.
No, I don't think he'll be a popular man for a very long time.
Yeah, but he is going to get them goals. And I think if they are going to stay up, he and Sam Vokes are going to have to be getting like 30 goals, 40 goals between
them. They're vital. I mean, Sam Vokes tore the Euros apart, so.
Yeah. But then so did Hal Robson-Kanu. He's got like 5 goals in his last 90 league games or something like that.
Has he signed for anyone yet?
No.
There you go.
Because no championship team wants him because they know he's rubbish.
Reading hate him.
Yes. And next up, we had Hull City winning at Swansea. And everyone was tipping, well, I did as well. I said, well, Hull, they won't do anything. They've only got 13 fit players. Don't even have a manager. Yet they've got 2 wins out of 2. I think that's a really good counter-attacking side as well. They've got a lot of pace in their side, especially up front with the likes of Diamandi. You've got Abel Hernandez. I still think they're going to go down, but I think they're putting up more of a fight than I thought they would. So maybe they're not won't finish 20th, but 18th or 19th instead.
That is what you should be aiming for. But nothing about Hull this season so far makes sense. They had 3 first team players on the bench for their opening day of the season against Leicester. They beat the champions. They go to Swansea, who are a good side. They've got a good manager in Guidolin. They beat them comfortably 2-0. Sean Maloney and Robert Snodgrass are tearing up the Premier League. Nothing about them makes any sense whatsoever. Abel Hernandez scoring, that's completely reasonable. I don't understand why he's at Hull. That's the confusing part. But they are doing... Now, an example I read the other day was Bolton. 2001-02, Bolton, very similar situation. Big Sam's manager. Everyone expected them to go straight back down. They had one of the best openings to a Premier League season in history.
Was that when he finished like 7th or whatever
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, at the Reebok, yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember. I was watching Premier League Years the other day, and I think that was the season that
That's
came
That's the
up.
Way to revise for the show.
Yeah, just watch Premier League Years. That is how to revise for the Football Hour. Next up, we had a very boring London derby between Tottenham and Crystal Palace. I mean, what is going on at Crystal Palace at the moment? I mean, they've lost Bolasie to Everton. Mm-hmm. I know they've signed Christian Benteke, but it looks like Zaha might be going to Spurs. I don't know why Spurs want Zaha. I don't think he's that good. He's your typical English winger. He's quick, agile, got a bit of skill about him, but there's no end product whatsoever.
Zaha is one of those players. Well, I say one of those players. He's pretty much the only player, but whatever, I'll carry on. He can only flourish at Crystal Palace. We found that out in the Championship. He went to Man United. Less said about that, the better. Goes back to Crystal Palace. He's back in good form. He'll go to Spurs. You won't hear of him for a year and a half.
Well, let's face it. Ahead of him, who have you got? You've got Eric Lamella. You've got Heung-Min Son. You've got Eriksen. I mean, I know Eriksen plays at number 10, but he has played out wide before. And basically, their fourth choice attacking midfielder, I guess you could say.
We could even make the argument that you could play Zaha up front as well. But then you've got Janssen. You've got Kane. You've got so many players who are ahead of him in the pecking order for any position that he can slide into. It makes no sense for his career to go there.
And I think if he goes, he's just going to make Pardew the favourite to be first sacked even more. Because he was favourite last week before they even lost to Tottenham, and now they're losing Zaha. I know they signed Benteke, which I don't think is that much of a good signing, if I'm being perfectly honest.
No, and if I look at the Crystal Palace side now that played against Spurs, if we take Zaha out of the equation because he's probably going to be moving on, I think I definitely rate one of the players in Scott Dan. Andros Townsend, I'm kind of not sure on, but apart from that, players like Jason Puncheon, Lee Chung-Yong, Connor Wickham, I don't understand how that's a Premier League side. I mean, Lee Chung-Yong struggled in the Championship a couple of seasons back.
And like Mr. Crystal Palace and Mal Yedna has gone to Aston Villa, hasn't he? I didn't understand that. I don't understand why you'd move, because he would have started for
And it's
Palace.
A step down, let's be fair.
Yeah, I think their only Premier League midfielder, if you take away the wingers, is Chase McArthur still there? And Kabai?
They've got Kabai still.
Yeah, Kabai, I mean, he's a quality player. But I think he's just sort of getting past it now. I mean, his prime years was his spell at Newcastle. And then he moved to PSG, no idea why. Because, you know, you're not going to get in a team with Verratti, Matuidi, Javier Pastore, are you? I know you've got a good free kick on you, mate.
He's ambitious, I'll give him that.
But, like, apart from that, I mean, Woodrow scored a free kick against Leighton Orient. Doesn't mean he's any good, does it?
But Woodrow for England.
Yeah, Woodrow for England. Because Broadcast Moose would love that, wouldn't he? Because he probably thinks he's the best striker in the country. But what have you made of Spurs? I mean, they sort of have pressure on them this year, but they sort of don't. New managers, sorry, coming into the division. Spurs have sort of been not forgotten about, but you forgot they were a massive club last year. I mean, I like Spurs. They're like my favourite other London team if I had one. I mean, I just like the football they play and stuff like that. And I obviously prefer it, and anything to make Arsenal fans annoyed is brilliant news. But what have you made of Spurs so far in the 2 games you've seen them?
Very unlucky that Hugo Lloris got injured on the opening day of the season. But then they've got a solid second choice goalkeeper in Michel Vorm, who's going to come in and do a great job, as we saw at Crystal Palace, keeping a clean sheet on his first appearance of the season. They've made a couple of good signings as well. I mean, Victor Wanyama, very, very underrated when he was at Southampton, now is coming in and doing a job for Spurs, obviously scored against Palace at the weekend. They had a lot of pressure coming on from last season that they probably should have won the league. I don't think they're going to be in that mix this season, though, looking at them so far.
I reckon they can get top 4. I reckon they can also easily get top four, because we'll get on to Liverpool later, because they're another one of the people who we think are going to finish in a top four. But for me, they're too inconsistent. Arsenal, if they sign the right players, then yes, they can challenge. But I mean, I reckon, honestly, this year might be the last year that Arsenal can finish in the top four, because I know they're linked with the likes of Mustafi and Lucas Perez today for like 50 million combined. But it just fills me with confidence that they can do anything. I mean, we'll move on to Arsenal when we talk about their game. But I think Spurs can scrape like a third or fourth place finish, because after United and City, there's not really any definites for the third and fourth. I personally think it's going to be Spurs and Chelsea. But you never know, because teams can have a late spur on, as you always know.
Well, I think Chelsea are definitely one of the teams that I'm tipping to be up there, because obviously they've got no European distractions this season, which will benefit them. And Spurs, I think, should be aiming for a Champions League place. Probably not for the title, like I said, but fourth place is about where they should be going for.
So yeah, moving on, we've just talked about Chelsea, and anyone who calls this a London derby can get in the bin. Watford is not in London.
It's inside the M25, mate. That's London for me.
No, that is not London. They're in Hertfordshire. That's like saying Sutton United are a London club. No, they're not. They're in Surrey. Or that's like, oh, no, they're not. But it was a very, very close game. Watford looked like they were going to get all 3 points, but Chelsea got two late goals. And talking about Chelsea, I've been really impressed with Michy Batshuayi so far. I mean, not like the way he plays, not just his Twitter account. I mean,
is up there, though.
His Twitter account is amazing. But I've been really impressed with Michy Batshuayi, because I wasn't sure if he'd get game time, just because Conte likes to play one up front usually. Oh no, he with Chelsea anyway, he likes playing two up front normally. But obviously Costa and Michy Batshuayi, I think, are too similar as players. But I mean, they did have good link up play in the second half against Watford.
Well, for £33 million, you'd hope he would make a couple of appearances. Obviously came off the bench against Watford, and it was an interesting gamble from Conte, because obviously it paid off. Watford leading for the majority of the second half. But then, yeah, Batshuayi coming on, he had that tweet in the back of his mind. That's the reason he played so well. I mean, you know what tweet I'm talking about.
Everyone knows what tweet you're talking about. If not, have a look on Michy Batshuayi's Twitter account. But, like, what I find really funny is, well, not funny, but when Chelsea signed Batshuayi, everyone's like, oh, it's a waste of money at 30 odd million. But in today's market,
That's quite cheap.
It's really not that bad. It's the same price as Christian Benteke. And what's really funny is, if Arsenal were going to go for Lacazette, he would have cost Arsenal maybe twice as much. But they pretty much had exactly the same stats last season. I think maybe it was Tony Cascarino looking in on Sky Sports News, and it was like, why would Arsenal pay 60 million for Lacazette when Batshuayi's only going for 30 mil? It just didn't make any sense to me. But I mean, Chelsea haven't impressed me this season. I'm going to say that. I mean, I don't like them anyway, but they haven't actually impressed me this season. But it's good to see that there are teams who are playing badly but are still getting wins, because as much as I loved Leicester winning the league last year, I feel like this season is the first season where the Premier League is going to be back, as you could say, as it would have used to be maybe like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's got that competitive spirit that it's lacked for a few years. I think Leicester winning the league last season did kickstart that, in that now every team seems to think they have a chance. Watford especially against Chelsea, and Burnley as well against Liverpool at the weekend, showing that even though, well, I mean, in the Watford example, obviously they were the better side, so probably didn't deserve to lose. But Burnley, as we mentioned, dominates for an entire match, get those wins, they build up a head of steam, they start to think, now we could go to, like, well, let's take Chelsea, the other side that I'm talking about, go there, get 3 points at the Bridge. But then Chelsea, they know that they could put in an appalling display against another team, but then also claim the points. Do you get where I'm going? It all sounds very complicated, even to me, but
yeah, no, it's very competitive. Like, last season, it technically was competitive because big teams were losing, but that's because the big teams are playing rubbish.
Yeah.
Whereas this season, the big teams have made massive signings. It has that late 2000s, early 2010s sort of feeling back to the Premier League, where you have the big four, or the big five, or the big six. Moving on, I don't really want to talk about this game, but you've got West Brom. They lost to Everton 2-1. I mean, it's nice to see Everton playing good again. I mean, under Ronald Koeman, they've clearly made massive progression in pre-season compared to how they were playing under Roberto Martinez last season, who has somehow got the Belgian job, which makes no sense to me.
With Thierry Henry as his assistant manager.
I know. I think Martinez isn't a bad manager, but he's not a good enough manager to manage a top five international side.
I mean, especially after the fact he's just been sacked by Everton as well. That's what makes it even more strange. They've got the oddest setup in international football by a country mile.
But if we move back to Everton, what have you made so far this season? Obviously, you can, as I said, there's been massive improvements compared to how they're playing, especially the second half of last season.
Yeah, Everton have looked like a good side so far. I mean, they weren't quite living up to their potential under Roberto Martinez, but now, in what I've got to say, their kit looks like it's from like 2003, 2004, the one they wore against West Brom. But they look like they are actually now getting performances from the players who should be performing. Lukaku may have been a swan song against his former club, but came on, I think it was at half-time, impressed. Morales, you know what he can do. Gareth Barry is a bit kind of, I don't know how you'd describe him, really, a little bit of a no mark.
If I was going to attach a phrase to Gareth Barry, it's what I would say is do a job.
Yeah.
He's just a do-a-job footballer.
Which is what he did at the Hawthorns.
Yeah. You know, if you put him in holding midfield, he's just going to do you a job. You know, he's just going to do what he needs to do. He's not going to do anything special, but he's going to do what you need to do in the holding midfield in that side. Simple as.
And if you forget, I think he made his debut for Aston Villa in like 1996. So coming on 20 years in the Premier League.
Oh yeah, 20 years, not 10 years.
Ridiculous. You kind of forget he's there until he pops up with a display like he did against West Brom. But speaking of West Brom, though, a lot of the attitudes of their fans have turned against Tony Pulis now. I mean, he came in initially after the very, very odd appointment of Alan Irvine at the Hawthorns, kept West Brom up. For me, that should have been the end of it, because that is what Tony Pulis exists to do, to keep teams in the Premier League. West Brom, I think, should be aiming a little bit higher these days, and the fans are starting to come around to that way of thinking. Tony Pulis is not a popular man. It's probably fair to say that caps at the Hawthorns aren't selling as well as they were originally.
Well, me and Alex mentioned this when we did Manager Watch on West Brom. We said that, well done, Pulis has got used to that sustainability, and now we need to push on and push up to like the top half of the second half, top half of the table, like Stoke have done. Stoke had Pulis for years, and like he did brilliant things with Stoke, but Stoke realised that, well, he can't push us any further. So they got in Mark Hughes, who's a great manager. He was at Fulham for only like a year,
yep.
But he did great things. Off. He got us to a top half finish. He had a very poor first half of the season, but that's not the point. He still finishes in the top half. And that's what West Brom sort of need to do. I know they've always been a yo-yo club, so they're sort of worried they might drop back down to that. But I think Pulis has sustained them enough that if they get a quality manager in, they could do well and push up to like 12th, 11th maybe. I don't know who that manager is, but it depends who comes available. Say someone like, not someone at the level of Bilic, someone at the level of Koeman comes up, West Brom might be able to attract him. You never know.
West Brom haven't won in a very long time, and that includes their EFL Cup tie midweek against Northampton Town. Pepe Mel, Alan Irvine, managers like that got the sack for much less at the Hawthorns. It's very strange that he's actually still in his job.
I feel like they know that they can keep him up. Where was Pepe Mel? I know he did keep them up. It's just, you know, they're unsure about him. But I mean, I don't know why we're having a massive discussion about West Brom and Everton, because the big game, or the massive talking point for me this weekend, was Leicester versus Arsenal. I know it was a 0-0 game. I mean, if we start off with the Champions, because I want to have a massive rant about Arsenal, so we'll get onto Champions first. What have you made of Leicester this season? Do you think they're missing Kante massively?
I think they were always going to when he left, because he, for me, I know Jamie Vardy got goals, Okazaki got goals, and N'Golo Kante was the man who won Leicester the league, and I think you'd agree with that last season.
Everyone would agree with that last season. You could see he was like having four men in midfield. You could play a 4-1-2 and you'd still be playing 4-4-2 because Kante would just be covering the hole in the midfield. I mean, he's what linked the defence to the attack. That's what he did.
The man could cover the whole of the pitch if he wanted to, let's be fair.
And so it's sort of like, now you've got your defence, you're on attack, and there's nothing linking the two together at the moment. I mean, but I think once they get clicking, they'll easily just finish in like 12th or 11th, even though I did say they'll finish 7th, which was a bit optimistic for myself.
Well, their performance against Arsenal was a bit more encouraging than the one against Hull, where most people expected them to kind of walk over. But obviously that didn't happen. They looked a shadow of the side that were playing last season. Jamie Vardy especially looked very, very odd. I think that would be the best word to describing him. Arsenal, I think, at the weekend, kind of counting their blessings that he didn't end up signing in the summer.
If we move on to Arsenal, they've been poor this season, but it is their fault. I'm not being funny, but Wenger says, our players haven't come back from the Euros yet. I'm like, sorry, mate, you've known this for 4 years. You know they're going to the Euros. You know France are the favourites to win it. So you need to prepare yourself in the transfer window for this.
It's the fact that he said as well that he can't afford to bring in players because he's got to pay the staff at the club, or the club have got to pay the staff, rather.
You're acting like other clubs don't have members of staff. It makes no sense. And what I was listening to on Sky Sports, can't remember who said, I think it was Paul Merson, like, about the defensive signings, because I sort of always needed a centre-back, right? They've only made two good defensive signings in the whole time he's been at the club. And that was Sol Campbell, who was on a free transfer. Everyone knew he was good anyway because of what he did at Spurs.
Yeah.
And Lauren Koscielny. If we list some of the other defensive signings, right? Pascal Segan, or whatever his name is.
Nice. Lauren.
Lauren, who wasn't the worst defender in the world, but he wasn't exactly great. You've got Philip Senderos.
Hero.
Like, I'm sorry, but Arsene Wenger's track record of signing players, defensively anyway, isn't great at all. It's because he inherited one of the best defences the Premier League's ever seen.
Players like Tony Adams.
Players like Tony Adams. Even in defensive midfield, like Emmanuel Petit. Oh, like, he's so frustrating because, you know, Arsenal can be a great club. And obviously, an excuse they've used over the years, the last few years, is the stadium. They've been there for maybe like 10 years now. So I'm sorry, you should have paid it off with the money the Premier League had given you as well. But the thing is, that stadium for me is downgraded Arsenal as a club.
I agree. I mean, when they're at Highbury, they were...
Yeah, if you think about when they're at Highbury, they were maybe 2 or 3 years before he left, they were the Invincibles. They were challenging for Champions Leagues. They got to the final against, what was it, Barcelona?
Barcelona, yeah, 2006.
And lost 2-1. It's like, they've definitely been downgraded as a club because they would have been able to sign these players easily back then, but obviously because of the stadium and the payments. But they're just a run-of-the-mill top four club now. They're not really any bigger than the likes of a Liverpool or Spurs.
Well, we're completely overlooking their big summer signing.
Granit Xhaka.
No, bigger.
Oh, the Japanese striker.
Even bigger than that. £2 million, Rob Holding from Bolton.
Oh, Rob Holding from Bolton. I mean, he's been great for them, not going to lie, but...
He's not quite the marquee name that Arsenal fans were looking for, though.
No, I mean, I know today there's... It looks like Mustafi and Lucas Perez have done deals, but Mustafi, you've wanted him the whole summer. How are you only just getting it done now? Like, you know the fee Valencia want. Pay it, he will come over. You talk personal terms, you do the medical. It's not that hard, Arsene Wenger. And then this Lucas Perez guy, right? He's no better than Giroud, let's face it. They need to be signing a world-class striker. I know Wenger's like, oh, we don't have the money. Well, if you don't spend the money, you're going to fall out the top four, mate. And if Arsenal make so much money, because obviously they run as a business, basically, under Kroenke and Gazidis, that... If Man United, I know they're a bigger club than you, but I know they can spend maybe 100 or 90 million, whatever it is, on Paul Pogba, then you can clearly spend, I don't know, 60, 70 million on a world-class striker. Because they need to be signing a top 10 striker, as in your likes of your Lewandowskis. I mean, personally for me, if they were going to sign a world-class striker, it would be Griezmann. Just put the £70 million bid in.
I mean, if it's money issues that they're having, I mean, here's a novel suggestion. I'm not sure if they've considered this. Maybe offload a couple of players and use the money to bring someone in.
Oh yeah, no, they stockpile so many young players. Like Callum Chambers.
Yeah.
Why is he still at the club? If Rob Holding's starting ahead of you, you know it's time to go. I'm not being funny, but he's basically a League One player.
Yeah. And Callum Chambers, if he moved to, I mean, I was going to say a Championship club, but he could get into a lot of Premier League sides. Move on, develop yourself, maybe go back in a couple of years if you want to play for Arsenal so desperately.
Even Theo Walcott, I know Wenger persists with him, but he's definitely not at the quality they need.
No.
I could see him going back to like the likes of a Southampton and doing well, because you can definitely see he's got the potential to play well through the middle, but it just doesn't work at Arsenal. Even when they had the likes of Johan de Jure back in the day, they kept him for a while.
What a hero.
They kept him for a while though, didn't they? I mean, they really stockpile players. Like, get rid of some. You don't need them all. Like, Tomas Rosicki, I know he was injured all the time, but he could have left ages before he got released or eventually pushed on. It's like, Wenger, if you sell so many players, you'll get more money. And with this new Premier League TV money, you cannot tell me you don't have the money to spend.
I think Wenger and a lot of his players are very sentimental, is what I've noticed about Arsenal. They don't want to leave the club. Wenger wants to reward that by playing them. It costs the club, it costs the players, it costs Wenger, because the fans, where he should be regarded as a god, are turning against him in their droves.
Well, if we think about it, he's been at Arsenal, what, like 20-odd years now?
Yeah, he's been at Arsenal since before I was born.
Yeah, so 20 years. I'm sorry, his record, I don't think it's actually that good. I know he did the Invincibles right, but he's only got like 9 trophies, 3 leagues, in 20 years, and he's supposed to be this world-class manager. Do me a favour.
Since 2004, what have they done bar a couple of FA Cups?
Exactly, and like, yeah, I think it's like 9 trophies in 3 leagues, if you, obviously because Community Shields don't count.
Yeah.
That is not what a world-class manager. I reckon Ronald Koeman could do better. if you give him 20 years at a club like Arsenal?
Off the top of my head, I can list more Arsenal failures in major trophies than wins since I've been a football fan.
Well, yeah, because there's obviously the famous one when Birmingham did it with Ofoe Martins in the last
minute. I'd actually forgotten about that one, funnily enough.
Ofoe Martins in the last minute, you got Barcelona. Like, the FA Cup win against Man United, when they last won the FA Cup before they won it a couple of years ago, that was the last time they sort of rubbished their way to a win in a tournament. I mean, yeah, I don't think Arsene Wenger's record is that good. And the worst thing is what he said, that, oh, the media are brainwashing Arsenal fans into thinking that we can sign these big players. I'm like, no, Arsene Wenger, you're brainwashing Arsenal fans into thinking they're still a big club when all you can do is finish in top four, and that's no good for a club supposedly the size of Arsenal.
And if he's also giving off the impression that they are a big club, they should be aiming for players that the media are supposedly brainwashing fans into thinking they should be signing.
If you're a big club, you're saying you can't even attract Griezmann. I mean, a big statement is when Jamie Vardy said it was the easiest decision he's ever made.
I mean, that sums it up.
Leicester to Arsenal, and you're saying staying at Leicester is the biggest decision you've ever made. I'm sorry, Arsene Wenger and Arsenal fans, but that is telling you something.
It's also not great PR as well. If you're the manager of the club and you go, oh no, there's no way we'd ever be able to sign them, they wouldn't want to come and play for Arsenal. Well, that's one of the most stupid things I've ever heard. You should be selling your club as the biggest club in the world, whether you believe it or not.
I mean, we'll see how these supposed signings in Mustafi and Lucas Perez do. I mean, Mustafi's obviously going to slot in straight next to Laurent Koscielny, and Lucas Perez and Giroud will fight for the two top, the one striker spot up front. So we move on from Arsenal, so I can stop shouting.
Keep going.
We move on to Super Sunday, where we had the North East Derby, as it was labelled as, which is not a derby, let's face it, it's just a local
rivalry.
Not
even in the same city.
Yeah.
Or the same county.
Makes no sense. Teesside versus Wearside. We had Sunderland versus Middlesbrough, and another win for Middlesbrough. And if we start off with Middlesbrough, because, I mean, I saw them play midweek. I mean, it was their second side, and we did win, because we're unbeaten all season. But I've been impressed with Middlesbrough so far.
I think they're going to be the surprise package of this season.
I said they'd stay up. Alex tried telling me Negredo won't score many goals. Well, he scored two and got an assist already.
Look at their signings. Look at them. Victor Valdez, Negredo, Brad Guzan, maybe not, but still.
Guzan.
I think I just saw your opportunity to mention midweek there, but let's avoid that.
Yeah, let's avoid that. I don't want to have a rant at Brad Guzan. But I mean, even the likes of Victor Fischer from Ajax, I mean, they've made some quality signings. I mean, Alex said who's like the player you should look out for. We said Grant Leadbitter, and I'm going to stick by that. Because I said he's like a good Lee Catamol, but Alex said more maybe a Drinkwater type player.
I think he's a very good player. I mean, he's been around for so many years.
I mean, he has played in the Premier League before under Sunderland, yep. Funny enough, who they beat. But, I mean, yeah, I have been impressed with Middlesbrough. I mean, Stuani's first goal, what a finish.
What a signing as well. Well, we're speaking about players that Middlesbrough brought in. Comes into the Premier League on his debut, two goals in a derby. That's the kind of player you want around. And the finish, as you mentioned, for that first one, he's going to go on to big things.
Yeah. Stuani, what a player. And his photo on Twitter, which he had to apologise for, because of Adam Clayton. Have you not seen it?
I've not seen it.
I could explain it. Basically, there's a picture which Johnny put up on his Twitter account. I don't know if it's still there, but he tweeted it, and then you have Adam Clayton with one testicle hanging out of his pants. Wonderful.
Picture. I do see it now. I mean, that's one way to celebrate a win.
That's one way to celebrate a win. Definitely Adam Clayton. Well done, mate. And next we had the worst game of the weekend by an absolute country mile.
In the Premier League, yeah.
In the Premier League,
okay,
yeah.
Just playing it safe.
West Ham versus Bournemouth. Did you watch this game live?
Luckily not.
Oh my God, it was so bad. I was just sitting in my living room on my laptop, and I was like, someone, just do something. Just do something. Like, have a shot on 40 yards or something. Like, nothing happened until the last minute or so. I think it was the 88th minute or 86th minute. And then I can't remember who ran down the wing. He crossed it in, and then Mikel Antonio, it was Gokantura, I think, who whipped the ball into the back post, and Mikel Antonio's there, funny enough, playing right mid where he should be playing.
Nice.
Because he's a right winger, and he comes out of the back stick and heads it into the back of the net to give West Ham a win, their first Premier League game at the London Stadium. Like, why were you playing Antonio right back though? I didn't understand that. Because you have a right back on your bench in Sam Byram, who you signed for like £7 million in the last transfer window. But no, just play a right wing at right back. No, play him on the right wing.
Yeah, and Sam Byram as well has tons of potential. Mikel Antonio is a very, very good right winger. He's Premier League quality. That's why he's in the Premier League.
You saw how many goals he got last season when he was played.
Yeah, but for some reason, Slaven Bilic isn't a man that make sensible decisions. I think that's the only way to put it. I had a bit of a think there, but I mean, we saw that in the Europa League. We saw that against Bournemouth last week. Got to say, two of the most irrelevant clubs, I think, in the Premier League, West Ham, Bournemouth. Great match to open the London Stadium with. But, and we're forgetting as well, Bournemouth had 10 men for like a good 20 minutes of the second half. But it took a player who'd been moved into his right position actually proving a point to settle it.
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about West Ham, they got locked out of the Europa League last night.
Yeah.
Why? Why would you not go for the Europa League? Because you're not going to get top four. You're going to get top seven at a push. Why not qualify for Europa League? I'm sorry, this proves that it's not as easy as everyone thinks. Fulham and Middlesbrough making the final proves that it isn't just a tournament you should doss about with. I mean, Liverpool lost in the final, Chelsea won the final. I mean, you have to give it a good go if you want to do well. I mean, I don't understand why Bilic has just thrown it away again.
It's a tad embarrassing as well for Bilic, because you look at some of the clubs that have played well in the group stage in the past few years. Birmingham, Wigan, Championship clubs didn't really embarrass themselves. They qualified, which is a lot more than West Ham can say over the past couple of years. If West Ham actually put a bit of effort in and worked kind of, I don't want to say worked hard, but you get what I mean, actually like made it a priority, they could go on to do a Fulham or a Middlesbrough.
Yeah, because I think when we got to the final, we finished like 12th. I mean, West Ham fans wouldn't be totally against making a European final and finishing 12th, would they?
No, and West Ham, to be fair, are a better side than Fulham were back there.
Oh yeah, definitely. We have Bobby Zamora and Andy Johnson up front.
They've got Dimitri Payet.
Yeah, Dimitri Payet. I think he might be a bit better. Oh no, he's not better than Zongira and Simon Davis.
Oh no, no.
We'll wipe that out straight away. But no, like, they have a team capable of doing well in the competition and they just haven't pushed on with it.
You can listen to all our latest podcasts on our Audio Boom channel. audioboom.com/thefootballhour.
So moving on to the big transfer news this week. It's been relatively quiet, I'd say, for me. Relatively quiet, compared to, like, previous weeks.
It's been a really weird summer, though. I mean, there's been a bit of activity, but as we come towards transfer deadline day, it all seems to be just winding down early.
Until we get to Wednesday, when it's just going to be absolute manic. But if we look at, like, the main news at the moment, obviously you've got, as we mentioned, Arsenal looking at Mustafi and Perez for $50 million altogether. If we look at the prices individually, we know the release clause of Perez is like £17 million. In today's market, I don't think it's that bad of a signing for £17 million.
No, I mean, as we said earlier, that's practically a bargain compared to some of the deals we've seen this summer.
He's half the price of Benteke and he's still got like 18, like 15, 20 odd goals last year. So it's not a terrible transfer.
No, I mean, it's one of those, though, where I think it's going to go one way or the other. I mean, you could say that about any deal, but this one especially. I mean, it's the Premier League.
It's a very, very, very Arsene Wenger type signing. Like, it could work. It might work.
On the bright side, though, for Arsenal fans, it's happening, which is more than they can say for any of the other deals they've gone for this summer.
Yeah, I mean, Mustafi, as we've said, they've been linked with all summer, and he's only the age of 24. The really funny thing, obviously, he was an academy player at Everton.
Yeah.
And then he went over to the continent and now he's supposed to be coming back for a 5-year contract in excess of £35 million. I mean, you always knew they're going to have to pay 30 odd million for him.
Yeah.
And I know it's 30 odd million pounds, but for that, I'm not being funny. I'd go for someone like Diego Godin. I know he's old, but Arsenal, I think he'd suit Arsenal better, personally.
I mean, I agree. I think Wenger's got a weird fixation on youth. I mean, I know he's 24, but maybe go for a bit more of current quality than future quality. It's like playing Football Manager, right? You can go for a player who's got very high current ability and will get you results there and then, or invest in a player who's got very high potential ability. Maybe in a couple of years after regular first-team football, he'll be very good.
Yeah, it's like what you do. You sign, like, it's like Gabriel Barbosa. If you play Football Manager, everyone knows who Gabriel Barbosa is. He's got that mad potential ability, but he doesn't actually start scoring you 20, 30 goals a season until three or four seasons later. A bit different from Mustafi. I think he's nearly at his peak. I mean, it's a bit hard to get into the German national team all the time when their two starting centre-backs are Matt Hummels and Jerome Boateng.
Couple of average players.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, all right players, aren't they?
Yeah, they're okay. I'd have them at Blues.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I think Mustafi's a good signing. It's just I think they need to be looking at world-class players. They want to be a big club again. Simple as. Mustafi wouldn't be a centre-back I'd put past like a Spurs or an Everton signing. So, are they going down to that level now? I mean, the other defender they were supposedly linking with was the Jimenez from Atletico Madrid as well.
Yeah.
Who has a release clause of like 50 odd, 60 odd million, which I don't think's that bad. Because I think he's a really good defender. for his age, I think he's only like 21 years old, but he's already got probably more experience than any of Arsenal centre backs.
The question is though, will they pay it? It could be a bargain, but
if you look at market inflation, he could easily be worth like 100 million.
Oh yeah,
in like a few years' time, if you're looking at market inflation for it, it's ridiculous. But I don't think this is what Arsenal need.
No, well, as we're talking about world class players, they're not names that jump out to me. Like, I had to do a bit of research to work out who they actually were, as someone who doesn't follow much continental football. If you're an Arsenal fan and you're not as clued up, you're going to be very confused as to why you're not going for players like you said earlier, like Godin, who are names in this country already without having to make an impact. So, as I mentioned, gamble could pay off, might not pay off. The way I'm leaning at the moment is it probably won't pay off.
I mean, I know I've just been naming every Atletico Madrid player under the sun, but they've just got a load of good players.
Diego Forlán's still there. Bring him in.
He can die as far as I'm concerned.
Don't hold back.
Just don't like that man. Don't like that man. But we move on to West Ham. Everyone knows they're after a striker because Andy Carroll obviously got injured again.
Really?
Yeah.
Andy Carroll. Oh, hang on a second. I just need a moment to recover from that.
Surprised no one on Twitter has called him an injury merchant, because, I mean, that would be the most football Twitter or anything to say. Like, moving on, yeah, if we took the best merchant tweet I ever saw was someone who called Manuel Neuer a shot-stopping merchant. I was like,
nice.
He's a goalkeeper. That's what he's supposed to do.
That's the scientific term for it.
Yeah, I mean, but we look at West Ham, they're after forward. Today they're supposed to be linked with Simone Zaza from Juventus, who did score against them in the friendly, actually. He scored the winner. But he did that weird penalty in the Euros when he was just running on the spot for about 5 minutes, looking like really
one of those.
He looked like he really needs to go to the toilet.
Jason Punchin style.
Yeah, Jason like Punchin style. Zaza is supposed to be £24 million. I'm sorry, I wouldn't go for him with the likes of Remy and Boney both available for the same price.
£20 million, I think I'd rather have Zaza Gabor. To be fair,
I just don't understand why you go for Zaza instead of someone like Remy and Boney. I know he's a bit younger, he's only 25, but in West Ham style of play, I think Remy, especially Boney, would suit them a lot better.
Considering West Ham are owned by David Gold and David Sullivan, the players who in the past, this is not an exhaustive list, the owners who in the past have said that they've gone for players like Diego Maradona, Jean-Pierre Papin, they tried to get Jamie Vardy this summer. It's very odd that they're lowering themselves to that and not a world-class international superstar.
Yeah, they're lowering themselves to Zaza. Zaza.
It's poor from everyone's favourite porn barons.
Yeah, I mean, moving on to Palace, we had mentioned Zaha looking like he might be going to Spurs, but the chairman, Steve Parrish of Crystal Palace, has blocked the transfer. I mean, if he should just talk to Zaha and say, use your brain, do not move to Spurs, you won't play football.
It's a story of Zaza and Zaha, isn't it? I think it does make sense for Zaha not to go to Spurs. As we talked about earlier when, compared the sides playing against each other this past weekend, it makes sense for the club, it makes sense for the player. Spurs, I don't see why they want him. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't see the fit.
No, he hasn't. Spurs is wide players do have end product. That's why they're there. But he just doesn't have one. And obviously, a massive move, who we don't know where he's going, is Joe Hart.
Yes, legend.
He's clearly leaving City. I said this last week. I think the best move for him is to not go to another club in England. I think he should go somewhere in Spain. Sevilla will link with him. Oh, I think that's the best move he can. Someone tried arguing with me that, oh no, Everton are a bigger club. I was, what, Everton bigger than Sevilla? Are you, what?
Yeah, because all of those European finals that Everton have won over the past few years.
When was the last time Everton won 3 Europa Leagues on the bounce? And just because they're in Spain, they finished 7th last year. They finish in the top 7 in Spain pretty much every single season. And if he wants to play at Man City again, he's going to need to go to Spain to learn the style of football they do, starting games every week, become this sweeper keeper, as they call it, learn how to pass the ball, basically.
Very continental. I've got to say, though, while we're on the topic of Joe Hart, very unoriginal of the Man City fans to sing Stand Up If You Love Joe Hart in the week. Bolton away 2010, mate. Been there, done that.
Been there, done that.
We had Pamela Anderson run on the pitch and give him a kiss, so what more could you want?
Yeah.
Come home, Joe. Forget Sevilla.
You could say Joe could still get back into the City team because he is a couple of years younger than Claudio Bravo.
Yeah, and bar a couple of errors in the Euros, he's a very reliable goalkeeper. Like, he'll pull off some world saves. Yeah, he's got a couple of errors under his hat, but which goalkeeper these days doesn't make the occasional blunder?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair though, if he was like Romanian, he would have left City a long time ago. For me.
Is that a dig at Costa Pantelimon?
No, not a dig at Costa Pantelimon, because I think he's good. Just because he's tall, he makes it look like he's actually a good goalkeeper.
But he is rather tall.
Yeah. There's something on the gossip here from ESPN saying Tottenham are considering a move for Liquid Mangala. Why? You've got Vertonghen and Alderweireld, Wimmer. I mean, he wouldn't start for them.
I think Spurs have reached that stage. I mean, you play FIFA as a kid, you play manager mode. You sign all the names just because you can afford to, but you don't think, am I actually going to play them? That is currently what Mauricio Pochettino's doing.
Yeah, because Zaha, he won't start. Mangala, for me, he won't start. He's not. Alderweireld's one of the best defenders in the league for me.
Possibly in the world.
Yeah. Vertonghen's a great defender. He's not going to start. I mean, that's just probably rubbish because he would only be backup.
I'm interested to see if it does happen, though, purely because I want to see what Pochettino is thinking about. I can't work out him, Zaha. Spurs have just lost the plot a little bit.
From the Times, it says here that if Zaha left Palace, with Steve Parrish is obviously trying to block, they'd go for Moussa Sissoko.
Don't think I have the words to express my thoughts on that.
How does that work? How does that work? And obviously, the big news yesterday was obviously Southampton and Sofyan Anbufal from Liga. He could do well. He's still pretty young at the age of 22. He can play out wide, play through the middle. He's a very Southampton type player for me.
Yeah, I can't say I know much about him, but having done a little bit of a brief look at him, he does seem to fit their mould. I mean, as we said earlier, Puel has got a very interesting system, which means Nathan Redmond is playing up front. So let's see how he fits into that.
Remember to visit our website, thefootballhour.com. for all our latest podcasts and articles.
Yeah, so if we look at the Premier League fixtures coming up this weekend, we start for the lunchtime game tomorrow, big game, Spurs-Liverpool. What do you think?
Huge. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Spurs bounce back from what was a very interesting performance last week, as we've already mentioned. They're not a better side than Liverpool. I'm going to throw that out there. Liverpool with Sadio Mane, for me, signing of the season, signing of the summer. That will be proven over the course of the Premier League. But saying that, when they actually seem to meet, there's never much to divide them. Do you know what I mean?
No, so, it's always a really, really close game. And I mean, recently Spurs have been a better club than Liverpool. I think in the last 7 years they finished above them six times.
Easily.
I mean, the problem of Liverpool is they have ability to win the league, but they also have the ability to finish seventh. They're so inconsistent. Because they had a good 20 minutes against Arsenal, and then when they start conceding goals, you could tell they were just dropping. I mean,
it's free-fall.
And I think Martin Keown said something earlier. He's not a fair pundit. I think he's useless. But he's saying that for Klopp, for being such a good coach, his defensive signings haven't been that good. In terms of Klaven and Matip. I mean, if Liverpool want to win the league, and again, they need to be signing the likes of Jimenez, Godin, even Mustafi would be better than Klaven and Matip. I mean, I know they let Skirtle go, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of Liverpool. I think they can make the top four, but I just think they won't because they're too inconsistent.
When they performed well last season as well under Jurgen Klopp when he came in, so by the law of Anfield, as I like to call it, it should be a poor season for them.
Yeah,
that's the way they work.
So what's your prediction for a result in this game? You're going to go for a win for either side, or you think it's just going to be a close game as always and end up in a draw?
It'll probably be 0-0, but if anyone does win, it'll be Spurs, but it'll be very, very late.
Yeah, you're going for a 0-0. I'm thinking I'm going to go for a 1-1 in this game, just because I think both teams are so good attacking wise I can't see there not being any goals in this game, but I don't think either side is going to win. Next up we have Chelsea, who've got Burnley at home.
Yes,
I think Chelsea are just going to Chelsea this and win like 1-0.
I think they'll win, but I think a little bit differently to you. I think Burnley, even though they had their big result last week, they're going to be a little bit taken aback, I think, by the Andre Gray situation, their fallout, the fact that he did perform so well, but then the fact that he's going to get so much abuse on Saturday that I think it may work against them, and Chelsea could get like 4 or 5.
Yeah, because I can see that happening as well. It's either going to be a really close game, like a 1-0 or 2-1, or it's just going to be a 4-5-0. But I haven't been that impressed with Chelsea so far. I don't think they can score that many goals. But again, we just agree Chelsea are going to win this game.
I think
easily.
So, yeah.
They're moving on. Oh, what a game this is.
Huge.
Crystal Palace against Bournemouth.
I mean, when I can contain my excitement to actually like logically think about who I think will win this, it is close. Two very, very good world-beating sides in Crystal Palace and Bournemouth, but I think that the stripes of the cherry and black variety will be claiming it.
Yes, if anyone's going to win this game, for me, it's going to be Bournemouth, because I know they've lost their first two games, but they were against Man United and West Ham. I mean, and West Ham was their first game in their new stadium. And I don't think they've played that badly in either game.
Well, they didn't deserve to lose against West Ham. We said earlier it was the most boring game, but they were unlucky that Antonio had his point to prove. Now they're playing Crystal Palace, who aren't that good, as we've gone far too into detail about already. They are going to claim it, like 2-1.
And they've got some relatively quick players as well, Bournemouth, so they could work well on the counter-attack against Crystal Palace's not exactly great defence, is the best way to put it. So I think I'm going to say 2-1 Bournemouth for this.
Yep, I agree, 2-1.
Next up, another mid-table clash between Everton and Stoke. I mean, it's two teams, again, who play nice football, who are on that border of pushing into that area of the big clubs, like the top seven or so. But I think because Everton are at home, I've been impressed with them so far. Stoke have been all right. They haven't sort of properly started kicking on yet. So I think I'm just going to have to go for an Everton win in this game. I just feel like Everton will have too much at home for Stoke City.
I agree. I think Everton under Koeman are a lot better side than they were under Martinez. Stoke, again, good manager in Mark Hughes, haven't quite got their season started the way they'd probably like to after their result last week, where they conceded 4 unfortunate goals, I'd say, bar the penalty. So yeah, I think they're going to go in against Everton thinking they could get 3 points, but that will be their downfall, and Everton will catch them on the counter-attack and probably get 2 or 3.
And next up is the champions Leicester up against Swansea City, who again have had an inconsistent start. They won their first game away from home, and then they lost last week to Hull City. And obviously both these teams have actually lost a Hull so far this season. But I mean, I think Leicester might just hopefully start to click again, and they might be able to get their first win this season in this game. I don't think it's going to be a massive margin of win, maybe by 1 or 2 goals, but I just think Leicester are going to have too much for Swansea, because I've been really impressed actually with Ahmed Musa from Leicester. I mean, he's just running the channels Pep and Vardy is this season. I mean, he's set Vardy up for quite a few chances.
He's about as close to a replacement as N'Golo Kante you're going to get. Obviously slightly different position, but he does the job that Kante did because he was that flexible in midfield. Leicester are due a win. They're going to be buoyed by their Champions League draw, which I think is very, very winnable. And they're going to go to Swansea, and I think that, well, they're not going to go to Swansea. Swansea are going to come to them, but I think the Swans may be a bit taken aback. It could be probably a 1-0 win for Leicester.
And then we have not another London derby, because as I said, Watford aren't in London. But Watford versus Arsenal, a north inside the M25 derby.
It's a huge London derby, Dom.
It's not. Watford versus Arsenal, I mean, I really want Arsenal just to not win again. Just to make Arsenal Fan TV a really fun watch on Saturday evening when I get back from Blackburn. But I can't see Arsenal winning this. Not me funny.
I genuinely agree. I was just thinking that while you were talking. Should Arsenal win that? Yeah. Are Arsenal going to win it? No. It's Watford and it's Arsenal. They're two clubs that for some reason, when they meet, all laws of probability make no sense.
Yes, so I'm going to put this out here. I'm going to go for a Watford win.
I mean, I said it's going to be very, very odd, and I don't think Arsenal are going to win, but then again, unless Troy Deeney suddenly decides he wants to have the match of his life, I don't think Watford are going to get the 3 points, so I'm just going to go 1-1.
Yeah, 1-1, 1-0 Watford. I know, Arsenal aren't winning, basically. That is what we've come
from.
That's
the consensus, yeah.
And the evening game is two teams who won both their games this season in Hull City against Manchester United. Man United are just going to win this, aren't they?
I'm back in Hull.
You're going to back Hull?
I'm back
this?
In Hull to win the Premier League. Now, after that start to the season, they're proving that, in the words of famous advertising slogan, impossible is nothing.
Possible is nothing, except if you're Hull City.
We'll see. I think Hull are going to snatch it.
You think Hull will snatch this?
Genuinely. It's going to be a Curtis Davis header from a corner.
Curtis Davis.
Because that's how the world works.
That is how the world works. Yeah, you're going to go for a Hull win. I'm going to go for United scraping a 2 or 3-1 in this game. I think Ibra's just going to do absolute bits again.
I am hoping Ibrahimovic does score though. Maybe 2 Davis headers. I need those fancy points.
Need those fancy points all over the shop. Why is this a Super Sunday game? Why is West Brom Middlesbrough on TV?
Huge, mate.
Why is this being televised? Who in their right mind is going to watch this game? Probably me when I'm hungover on Sunday morning. But West Brom Middlesbrough, really? Why is this on TV?
I've been counting down the days since the fixtures were released for this one.
Oh, really? Massive game.
It's going to be huge. Pulis Karanka, Gardner Negreda, Clash of the Titans.
But what went through Sky's brain when looking? Oh yeah, this would be good on TV. Not Watford Arsenal. No. West Brom Middlesbrough. It's just because West Brom probably needs to be on TV once before, like, a certain time period. It's the only reason the game's on TV.
I can't wait, genuinely.
I think Middlesbrough are going to win it. I'll say that. Middlesbrough are going to win this game. I'm going to go for 2-0.
I think Middlesbrough, yeah, I mean, they've been a good side so far this season. A good result against Sunderland. West Brom, polar opposite. Fantate the manager. Middlesbrough have got that wave of optimism about them. They're going to win it, and it's going to be one of those matches that you tell your grandkids about in 6 years' time.
I remember that Super Sunday back in August 2016 where Middlesbrough beat West Brom 1-0 thanks to a Negredo shoulder barge in the box.
Brad Guzan putting on the display of his life.
Yes, that is 100% happening. And then the 4 o'clock game on Super Sunday is actually a good game. It's going to be West Ham making the trip to the Etihad after their awful performance in the Europa League last night. Awful.
Against Astra Gugu.
Astra Gugu, as Dom says on Arsenal fan, not Arsenal fans, even West Ham fan TV. Astra Gugu. But yeah, Man City are just going to walk this, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
3-0, honestly.
I don't think I've got anything more to add about that one because it's polar opposites. Man City, it's going to be a Chelsea Burnley situation. It's going to be a few goals in it. Fair. None of them for West Ham.
None of them West Ham. So I'm going to say 3-0 City. You're going to go, what, 6, 7, you know?
Let's go 4 or 5. Same as Chelsea Burnley.
Same as Chelsea
Burnley.
On
the side of caution.
Well, this has been the Football Hour. It's been a longer podcast than usual. Actually closer to the name of our show, aren't we?
That's what you've got to go for.
The Football Hour instead of the Football 5 minutes, you know. But it means if you've somehow listened all the way through this rambling, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
I salute you.
I salute you as well. So this has been the Football Hour of me, Dom Betts, as usual. And today I was joined by lovely Callum Denning. You've enjoyed being on, Callum?
It's been a pleasure.
We've been talking about everything from, you know, Arsene Wenger to Astra Gugu.
Astra Gugu, mate. Astra Gugu.